Good morning. This is the Thursday edition of Down to Brass Tacks, 4341-790. The number you call to reach us, you can send a WhatsApp message to 266-4862, or you can send an email to brasstacks@starcomnetwork.net. We have our usual breaks. We track the latest at noon. We have network news from Flo. We also have the latest at 12:30. And we go until 2. John Stout is taking care of things technical. I'm Dennis Johnson, your host. Look forward to engaging with you on this Thursday. Now, I am a little skeptical about regional roundup today because it's Republic Day in Trinidad and Tobago, and I'm not sure whether the news team in Trinidad are actually working or whether they're all in Tobago for a long weekend. But anyhow, the political temperature rises in Barbados. The Barbados Labour Party announced its candidate for the by-election in St. George North. I was told by my newsroom a short while ago that the Democratic Labour Party has scheduled a news conference for 10, so it should be starting around now. I've asked them to keep in touch with me if there's any breaking news. I actually pulled the leg of my newsman and said to him that if he is the candidate, please let me know before the rest of the public does. But the Solutions Barbados, they already have a candidate in place. The leader says he's the man. The UPP candidate has also indicated that he is ready to run. So it's the Democratic Labour Party and the PDP, still to name their candidates. I have a message here that says the Ministry of Education, Technological and Vocational Training has advised that the Lodge School at Society in St. John is now closed due to an environmental problem. Parents and guardians are asked to collect their children as soon as possible. Buses from the Transport Board are on site to move the students, and school will be online tomorrow to facilitate the remediation needed. And that's from our news and public affairs, the head, and that's a relief from the Barbados Government Information Service. Right, so what's on your mind this morning? Hello.
Yeah, good morning.
Yes, sir.
Now, Dennis, in cricketing terms, in order to have a good innings, it all depends on the opening batsman.
No, it also depends on the bowler. There have been a few golden ducks
I am placed in a position where I am going to try my best to uplift this program and to send the listeners thinking. Now, I went into town last week. Let me tell you why I want to deal with first. I want to deal with what my observation in Bridgetown. Secondly, with the election of the year, I want to give a historical background, a part of St. George. And thirdly, I want to look at electoral politics in Barbados. So let me start off. Now, I went into Bridgetown last week. I really don't visit Bridgetown that much anymore. And the first thing that I saw as I accustomed come across the bridge, which I missed the building, so I decided, well, now I have realized that they have the barricades tear down and you can look across and see the where the building came from. And the first thing I do is I park my car on Nelson Street, as usual, come back, walk, and look at the spot where the National Insurance building was.
I was trying to figure out which building you were in.
Could you recall that during the heated debate on whether the building should have taken down or not, people were saying that water was coming from the river under the building or to that effect, where it was affecting water, was affecting the building, the inside. So I first went and looked to see that since the building is taken down, well, let me see if there's any flooding or any water being settled that would have come from the river. And to my amazement, no water was there.
Sir, you are misreading that comment.
And yeah, I remember that.
I will tell you this again. Soft stone, as we call it, coral, absorbs water. It does not mean that if the building is not there, you will see water. Let me give you an example. The old Mutual building at the bottom of Broad Street. You know that magnificent building?
Yep.
You know that's on water?
I ain't got no clue.
It is. The foundation is not on solid ground. It was built on a barge at one point. So here's the problem. Where we are here at Starcom Network, for example, water comes up from our foundation into our walls, moves the paint, cracks up and puts moisture into the walls. Because we are in River Road, which is water.
Yeah.
Now, if you take the building down, it don't mean you can have a pond.
Okay. All right. Let me go a little further. Mm-hmm. I'm glad to see the, what I call the market village or something, so that's what they call it.
Yep.
Over in front by you. But to my amazement, Dennis, years ago, all back down in 1994, when it was with the climate pay movement and such like, when we were defending vendors, I said on more than one occasion that both the Cheapside Market and the Fairchild Street Market should have developed in a way where you have the market at the bottom and a car park at the top, so that if you had come to do shopping, you would take the cars off the road as much as you possibly can, and people could park the car on top, and then you could do your shopping underneath and then collect the car. So I was thinking in terms of utilizing what land space you have. Good? So I'm not surprised. I said, well, I was disappointed, but I'm still glad that something is being done. That is my part pertaining to Bridgestone.
No, hold on a second. Have you seen the plans for that thing?
No, I've seen the plan. It's only what I saw.
Okay, well, according to the plan that was released, there is a place for parking. There is also going to be other kiosks added and various things done to that site as it develops. There's a plan drawn somewhere right outside River Road. I'm not sure if it takes in the entire thing. I was kind of surprised at the number of car parks or the lack of car park spaces that they said they had, but there are car park spaces assigned there. My thing continues to be, I think the bus stand is misplaced. I have always said so, and I will continue to say so. I think people should walk through the vendors' kiosks to get to the bus stand, rather than people walk into the bus stand and the kiosk is beyond it, depending on which side you're coming from. But Bridgetown is supposed to be your main area, so people will be coming from Bridgetown to get the bus. The reason why I'm saying that is this. If you walk through a nice vendor's mall to wait on your bus, if the bus stand itself is crowded, especially in these COVID times when we're talking about spacing, if you have a nice vendor's area covered before you get to your bus stand, multi-storied too if necessary, you can go there, you can sit, you can have a cup of tea, a glass of water, a sandwich, and wait on the call to go on board your bus. To me, it just makes sense. If you're going walking through town and you got a little extra coins in your pocket and you see a banana and an orange or a golden apple that look good, and you know you could spare it in addition to your bus fare, right, and you're going to wait 2 hours on the bus, because I hear complaints about people waiting on the bus for 2 hours. You buy a golden apple and you sit and you eat. You know, that's how we are. So to me, I have always said it should be the other way around, but it's just a fella's talk on the radio.
That is sufficient for Bridgetown.
Uh-huh.
Now, I was doing some historical research. As I tell you now, that I got an advocate paper in front of me, Tuesday, March 23rd, 1982, with Prime Minister Tom Adams about to go up the steps of the House of Assembly yesterday to start debate on the 1982-83 estimates. And the headline there is Adams calls for more restraint. I would not delve into that right now, but I am only showing you that something. It is good to have your papers and have, as long as you're interested in the subject, you should keep yourself abreast. Now, I am looking now at the St. George Affair. Now, I want the public to understand the behavior of St. George. And 44 years ago, this is a historical thing, 44 years ago, Dennis, Dr. Richard Christopher Hines was placed in St. George to represent St. George North. He was what you would call a medical practitioner and an island scholar.
Mm-hmm.
And he was rejected by St. George North. Today, what I am hearing is that the Democratic Labour Party is going to send another medical practitioner who is in the name of Esther Bicycle. I cannot confirm it, but I could tell you what I heard.
Mm-hmm.
And she is also not an island scholar, but an exhibition scholar.
Mm-hmm.
So what I am seeing, having a candidate of that caliber and a female at this time, it is showing you that the Democratic Labour Party believes that St. George should have a certain type of representation. Then they look at those two educated personnel that be taking up the poll and contesting the election. This is very intriguing and interesting, where people of that type of position could offer themselves to St. George. And I'm glad for her, and I was glad for Richie Hines then. But it is the decision of the people. It's the people who make the decision. Now, let me go on.
I am surprised. Very surprised by that comment.
Okay.
I expected to hear you on it. But I have to tell you, after hearing you talking several times about union representation and, workers' cases, etc., I wasn't quite sure what your line would be. But okay. Go ahead.
But you know that I told you already what I thought about the union.
Yeah, I know, which is why I did not expect what you just said.
Right, I ain't going down that road, but you know I can deal with that in due course.
What, you going on the platform?
Especially St. George, which was an agricultural area in 1963.
Right.
And the comments that was made from the trade union movement, where the present candidate now, Tony Moore, represented the Division Fall. Then the union had some very unkind remarks to use to the working class in St. George and otherwise, but I'm not going there yet.
But, sir, listen, let
but
us appreciate.
That
I know, I plan to. You see, the problem is you, the batsman, you know, and that's why I tell you, gotta be careful. You
all
may
right,
come out expecting
right.
pace, and I may decide to spin. Listen,
right.
I'm not a spinner, but let me say this to you. As someone who believes that there must be a mixed economy, let me put my cards on the table. I believe that there are certain areas in Barbados that the topography and the geography and the rainfall lends to certain things. St. George and St. Thomas, those central districts are, to me, an agricultural belt. And while I understand that agriculture over the years has changed its look, and you've gone away from acres and acres and acres of hundreds and thousands of acres of just, you know, one type of crop, and that you have aquaponics and all sorts of other things going on now, I do not like to see concrete industrial estates going up in St. Thomas and St. George. I don't like to see it. I don't think it's necessary. I think the land is being misused. Let me put it that way. I'm putting it bluntly. That's how I feel. I think there are areas in Barbados where you can have industrial development, where you could have concrete buildings, where you could have whatever you want to put up if you want to pursue industry, even if it's agricultural offshoots, right? I don't believe the area where you have heavy rainfall and fertile soil should be used for concrete development. That's just me, right? Having lived in one of those two areas. So therefore, when you talk about representing the masses, you have to again factor in that the days of people working in the area in which they live and grow up has also changed. So you may find people who live in St. Thomas who don't necessarily work in St. Thomas. You may find people working in St. Thomas in agriculture who come from somewhere else, St. George, St. Philip.
Where did you have a force in agriculture? It's moved. Reduced a lot.
Yeah, but it has also been transient. It has moved.
Yeah. All right, let me
so the representative may not be representing agricultural people at all. But anyway, all right, go ahead.
Let me finish now on the electoral politics.
Yes, sir.
Now,
I'm
a bit concerned, and I ask the general public to be very concerned.
Mm-hmm.
Now, competitive politics and elective politics.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you had two members vying for a position, and there's 40 members that have to vote for them, you will end up saying, well, John Brown got 30 votes, and Jim only got 10. Mm-hmm. So John Brown is the winner.
Right.
You follow where I'm coming from?
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's two instances since the Barbados Labour Party won election that got me in a puzzle. The last annual conference of the Barbados Labour Party, I was hearing that Dwight Sutherland was actually being asked to be nominated to the position of what you would call president of the Barbados Labour Party.
Mm-hmm.
Then we heard Ian McConney came in.
Mm-hmm.
I have not heard if whether or not the president or the president who was interested in it any longer was interested, but we hear that he gave way for Ms. McConney.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first elective after Prime Minister Mayor Martley leaves the presidency.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first one out of that calibre. But now you're going into St. George North for a candidate. Now, when I was hoping or expecting to hear that there are two, even the same Tony Moore, and other people who may be interested in the candidature, I was expecting to hear, well, this body get 30 votes, the other body get 20, and the other body get 10.
Right.
You didn't hear that.
Right.
What you heard is that a selected few people of the executive of the branch went down to either a law court or Robert Street and give the okay to the lady, whereas the branch of itself. Huh?
How you know that?
Very well.
No, I asking you how you know it.
I tell you very well.
Okay.
I can't disclose my information.
Sir, and that's why you can't put that information out there without disclosing it.
But it's
rumor and speculation if you do that.
Right,
I could rumor and speculate why I feel like to.
Dennis, take your time.
Don't
let me rush. Go back behind the crease before I deliver.
Nah.
Can you tell me
Last
night.
You can't tell me where to deliver.
Listen carefully.
Uh-huh.
Last night, the Prime Minister said that she met with members of the executive of the branch of the Barbados Labour Party of St. George North.
Correct.
And then she went the Monday, and she met the National Council last night.
Correct.
And she got the okay. And Tony Moore herself said that there was a candidate who was interested and gave way to her.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this give way thing
is
a serious thing.
Yes.
Because as long as democracy is not out there where people can dictate.
But you see, this is where, sir, that my delivery was perfectly legal and your advancing decrease is not. Here is the thing. If at no time, nothing you have just said had said that the branch did not meet, that the branch did not instruct the executive, that the executive did not receive instructions from the branch, or the branch did not ask the person to give way. At no point was that said. So therefore, one cannot say that that's what happened.
I can see now that the branch did not instruct the executive to go down to where they went and make the decision. And I got confirmation on that.
From the branch?
And then I can close on
from
that.
From the branch?
Yes. I got that. The branch had nothing to do with it.
Okay. So let me ask you this question then. Based on what you just said, the candidate should lose big time.
Well, it left to the people.
Mm. Okay.
And lastly, the people, I can give you more later on, but you take it easy. You go back behind the crease, rest.
Me? I ain't going back behind any crease. You're the batsman. You can't tell me where to deliver from. Let the umpire call me.
I'm only waiting to find out that Glenn Clark can have the audacity and the guts
to do what?
To go out there and thank the St. George people for allowing him to receive the monetary funds that he received, had not he been a politician. Because if he did remain a teacher, he would not receive his sort of gratuity, and he would not have the opportunity that he's going to receive.
I am amazed at the levels to which you guys go to support, big up, make larger than life politicians, leaders of political parties, and persons you support. And then the minute, down to the second, that they make one decision that does not include you, they become the worst things on the face of the earth. And all kinds of slander and innuendo and thing get thrown at them. That's why I stay out of elective politics. That's why I stay out of partisan political discussions, because of that piece of nastiness. I love politics. I love the intrigue. I love the discussions. I love everything except that one little piece that you just swing at the end there, sir. That was a swipe. Just like me stepping down the crease. That's why I stepped down the crease, because I know a swipe was coming. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning, Dennis.
Morning, sir.
There are four issues I would like to raise with you this morning.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Senator Moore is an independent senator, not so?
She was appointed by Her Excellency, yes.
Now, having accepted the nomination to run,
mm-hmm.
isn't that going to be a conflict of interest, and therefore she should resign from the Senate?
What will happen, I presume, when Senate resumes, because don't forget Parliament was prorogued, Her Excellency the Governor General may exercise her prerogative to instill new independent senators, as the government may do and the opposition may do as well. There's nothing that say they have to return. There is another independent senator that was given an assignment by the government, to my recollection.
So you're saying that there's likely to be the appointment of two independent senators?
And perhaps even a government one too?
Independent senator?
Perhaps even two independent senators, a complete new slate. Don't forget, we already have a new president of the Senate, so the government has already appointed one new senator. Her Excellency may change the entire slate. Don't forget, the Senator Moore, independent senator, was put there specifically to represent the union. That's what that position usually is. That's why Soroy and various other union persons were appointed independent senators to represent the interests of labor. So there is an opportunity to put someone else as an independent senator to represent the interests of labor. And Her Excellency has the opportunity to do so.
Okay. The second point.
Mm-hmm.
Public workers who are members of the BWU,
mm-hmm.
what type of representation would they expect?
Well, I don't know, sir. 28 years ago, when the hotel workers went on strike during Christmas and New Year's, who was the Minister of Tourism?
I can't recall.
Well, I could tell you. He was a representative for St. Lucie, the Deputy General Secretary of the Barbados Workers Union, the Honorable Evelyn Graves. That's who he was. That was the Minister of Tourism when tourism workers, represented by the Barbados Workers Union, went on strike during the height of the tourist season, Christmas into New Year's. That's who it was. So, it has happened before. Sir Roy Trotman, as General Secretary of the Barbados Workers Union, marched against the Erskine Sandiford administration. It has happened before. They make a determination as to who they will represent, the interests of the union or the interests of the parliament, as a parliamentary representative. They make a decision. Sometimes the decision is made for them.
All right. Thirdly, do we expect the CDBWU rejoining C2SAB?
I can't answer that one. That one I can give you no guidance on whatsoever. It depends on who makes the determination. I don't know. I don't know.
All right. Finally, if the number of entities supplying electricity to the grid, don't you think we should see a reduction in the fuel charge?
And it has been fairly low for a while. The determination, though, for the shift to renewable energies and how it reflects on the fuel charge is something that I think the Barbados Light and Power Company, the Fair Trading Commission, will have to determine. Because as more renewable energy sources go onto the grid, it will obviously affect the cost of fuel. And if the cost of fuel remains low, the fuel charge should not go up low. Go up, but it's been low for quite a while. Can it go down some more? I don't know. You see, here's the technical point of this that has always been a bone of contention. The Barbados Light and Power has argued on more than one occasion that if they did not make certain decisions, for example, if they did not bring in low-speed diesel generators when they did, the fuel charge would be much higher, and that it has been reduced because of the decisions they have taken. Now, fuel dropped to negligible amounts. In some cases, they claim it was the tank cost more than the fuel itself. But there has been a reduction in the fuel charge. And with the introduction, you should expect to see it go lower. But it depends on what the regulators work out with them, because that's something that's regulated.
Okay, thanks a lot, Dennis.
No problem, all sir. Right. Brass Tacks, 4341790. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, sir.
How are you?
I am all right, sir. And you?
Well, you know, I know the answer to that.
All right.
I have not any fresh news.
Okay. Well, they say no news is good news, so let's hope it's good news.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hope you follow the instructions yesterday.
I've been very calm of late, sir, trust me. But being calm on air don't mean that my spirit is settled, eh? It just means I'm being calm on air. Tell me.
What school was it that was closed today? I didn't hear all of it.
Lodge School, according to the note that I have here.
Oh, Lodge.
Let me make sure. The Lodge School, yes, is closed due to an environmental problem. Yep.
Okay. Now, the education minister to Mr. Plantney yesterday, I believe Caswell. Now, if according to the Minister of Education, the chinks, otherwise known as bag bugs, because they might end up were called chinks, was discovered since Monday, why wasn't the student sent home then? Why yesterday? That's what I'm asking. Simple question. You made a discovery on Monday. Why wait till yesterday to get the action that you took? That's all. You know, people have a habit, you being the exception, of not answering questions. They are. They don't know where you are. I'm a big boy about the place. I'm a tyrant. I'm a gangster. All I'm asking for is a simple explanation to that. And with that, then, let's carry yesterday into today.
All right, sir. You too. Take care. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Hi. Good morning, Dennis.
Morning, sir.
Yes, well, I'm going to the schools, but not I'm going for learning. Not for
not for chinks or bed bugs or to be disruptive.
No.
The principal's office. Yes, sir. Go ahead. Let me be of myself.
On Monday, you know, I like to listen to the news. I was a little stand back when, after listening to the Attorney General's comments, and I'm asking in order to be, if you can give me any guidance on the situation. Mm-hmm. When he made the point pertaining to having to write to the Queen in order to get permission for Mr. Barney Lynch to go off on his assignment. And then the Queen had to write to President Trump for his clearance of such, then to write back to the Queen. And then I'm assuming then the Queen wrote back to him and said it was all right. Now, after hearing that, it leads me to wonder, is it the normal practice of all persons, seeing that I think the American state seem to carry most of the persons who go out on attachments, to have such done? But I've never heard on about that type of situation. I don't know if it's a security or a confidential thing that way. We have never heard about such of a situations. So I'm just querying that if that goes for all persons when they're going on these attachments, or if it was for that one individual, to your best knowledge.
So, politics and the exercise of political language is something that I find fascinating, okay?
Mm-hmm.
If an ambassador, consular general, these various titles, if they are representing the state and the head of state is Her Majesty the Queen, whose representative in Barbados is Her Excellency the Governor General,
mm-hmm.
then by extension, the person has to have the approval of the head of state to represent the state in a foreign land. Mm-hmm. Notice I walk in slowly, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you decide whether or not to say that the approval to represent the state is given by Her Majesty, or given by the Governor General acting on behalf of Her Majesty,
mm-hmm.
or whether you say you send it to England for approval. I don't know, the terminology confuses me a little bit. And then when you get to the country that you're going to represent the sovereign state in, whether it's Australia, Canada, the USA, or whomever, you present your credentials to the head of that nation. If the head of that nation is the president, if the head of that nation is the prime minister, if the head of that state is, you know, whatever it is, that's the person to whom you present your credentials.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what those credentials state, I don't know. I've never seen one. But I have no idea whether it's stamped by Queen Elizabeth II, Her Majesty, whether it's signed by Her Excellency, the Governor General, or whether it just has one of them big red blobs, you know, of the realm. You know, those big red seals that used to be on the back of certain bottles that we used to drink out of.
Like that,
I know why you're laughing. I know why you're laughing. I know how old I think you are. So you should know about those bottles with a stamp on it. So, come on. You would know that there have been some bottles in the past that were said under the something of Her Majesty the Queen. And what, you think the Queen really tests the bottle that was in it before they put a stamp on it? Well, come on. Exactly. So I don't know, sir. That's why I said language is an interesting thing.
Right.
And I like how it is used from time to time.
Now,
in what context? Now, let me ask you this question. In what context was the Attorney General speaking? Was he speaking about becoming a republic? I know why you're laughing. So you see, if I want to put forward a certain argument, I would use that. I would use that.
Right. Yeah, because I found it fascinating when I heard the comic. I said, "Well, is this the normal thing that normally happens?"
I think it has to be approved by the head of state. Now, as I said, I don't know whether the head of state is seen as being Her Majesty, acting in her own on her own behalf, or the local representative. Let me, you know, look. I have a little peeve, and I say this all the time. I have a little peeve with the office of the Governor General in territories such as ours. I think that the trappings associated with the office are hand down from colonial times. And although we talk about the difficulties in our economies and the way, you know, we have become independent and we've changed the name, we've kept some of those traditions.
Yeah.
For example, the Governor General's car carries a crown.
Crown?
Yeah, it doesn't carry any number. It carries a crown. They have one that says GG, yes, but that's usually used, you know, in non-official times. Yeah, correct. Yeah. Right? No. For example, Trinidad and Tobago is a republic. Today is Republic Day in Trinidad and Tobago. They have the coat of arms on the Governor General's car. No, sorry, the President's car. But the President still lives in what was the Governor General's residence. It's just been remodeled for millions of dollars.
Well, somebody was asking me about the same thing when we become a republic. Where
will the President reside? So right. Here's my thing. This is where I think we have an opportunity to change where the President resides. Give the President a... Yes, I ain't talking about giving him a chattel house or her a chattel house. I'm talking about a decent building, but that does not take $1 million a year to maintain. $1 million a year is a lot of maintenance for, I mean, when and I'm going to go back to the Trinidad and Tobago one. The President of Trinidad and Tobago wanted to charge people a fee to come and look at the place. I mean, you know, and they had all kinds of noise about it. You know, and it's an opulent place for a single lady, and it's seldom ever used. So the question is, why would you spend millions maintaining a building that you use once or twice? When you go to official function, she goes somewhere else. What is the cost of maintaining this colonial trapping? No, there's people who like it, but there are others.
Very few functions are being held there.
Correct.
DG is more out to
go out and visit people and that kind of thing. Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, look, the other one is Illawarra Court, the official residence of the Prime Minister, who I know does not reside at Illawarra Court.
Mm.
But you have a staff. Now, I'm not saying send the staff home, because sending people home is always an issue. But you have to have executive housekeeper, executive chef, maintenance. They tell me the NCC does the maintenance. But there is associated expenses with those buildings.
Yeah. And that is kept in pristine condition.
It has to be, even if you use it once a year. Yeah. Because, again,
manicure.
There's some things that, but again, and it's done that way because Her Excellency represents the Queen. And therefore, there's certain things that go along with it, protocols that have to be observed. That's why when the Governor General had to do the throne speech, you had to have carpet running the entire length of the Lloyd Erskine Sandyford Center. And let me take this opportunity. Somebody tell me I'd like to impose my views on callers. So let me take this opportunity to impose my view on you. I thought the Lloyd Erskine Sandyford Center did an excellent job to prepare that place for the state opening of Parliament. It was a brilliant job. Well done. Take a bow.
And what a place or an area in which you could have gone back to.
Yeah, yeah.
After a lot of it, as I park, I would say to Mark that he had selected or he chose the wrong one to be the nominee.
let me ask you this question, though. Let me impose my view on you again, because I know it will be better. What will the good senator do when she becomes the parliamentary representative? Will she sit on the back bench?
Well, yeah, because all the others sat. They didn't have any. Well, Ben, it's just that you really clarified. But he was not a general secretary, he was just a deputy.
But let me ask this question then. Why is she needed in the House? Whenever the Prime Minister says heavy lifting, she's referring to a ministerial appointment. So she says there's heavy lifting to be done. So why does the Prime Minister need another backbencher?
So she, most likely her position might be to help to get workers to get use their good thinkings in order to work hard and diligently to carry the country forward.
But she's representing St. George North. She's not going into the House of Assembly to represent the Barbados Workers Union. She's going to represent the North.
She's going to be still the General Secretary, so the workers. But at least if she comes out from the Senate, no.
What's the difference? She couldn't make a representation strong enough in the Senate?
Yeah. but most likely, but another unionist would most likely step into her shoes.
I expect that, yes. And I also have an expectation of who that would be.
And it would not be wrong. I'm not going to say it, but I don't think I would be wrong again. But it would be carrying another St. George North connection.
All right, let me ask this other question again to you then. You pick a date for the by-election?
Well, I hope the Prime Minister is not listening to the program.
Me too.
I think that the by-election, seeing that they have nominated someone so early.
Mm-hmm. And the DLP is supposed to have a press conference at 10. I haven't heard from them yet, but I presume it's theirs as well.
It is going to be late October. It is going to be in October, or it is going to be in early November.
All right. I pick between the 11th. I am picking between the 11th and the 18th of November, and I say it so openly, so we can see who right. 6 weeks from now and 6 weeks from the end of the year. That's my pick. I'm not betting my hat or my shirt, but.
All right. Have yourself a good day.
You too, buddy. Just got a note from the newsman on location who says today's press conference at the Democratic Labour Party headquarters is nothing linked to the by-election. So I pull back in my nose on that one. We'll most likely hear during the 12:30 what that particular press conference is about, perhaps the upcoming conference this weekend. Got a WhatsApp message that asked me to read this notice sent. It said, first, I'd like to thank Minister Santia Bradshaw for acknowledging the concerns of the thousands of students, parents, and teachers across Barbados. However, the job is not complete. I hope the review process she announced this morning will see no additional fees being forced out of the pockets of helpless Barbadians, many of whom are still battling the economic adversities presented by COVID-19. It's not our fault that CXC has made gross errors in the grading of papers this year, which has seen thousands of high-performance students receiving abnormally low marks. They need to take accountability for their actions. It's not a matter they can save face and hope that we, the students, just go away. To make matters worse, the multiple-choice exams this year were not challenging, with upwards of 90% of the questions being repeated. It is absolutely disgusting for them to continue to imply that the cause of these horrendous marks are as a result of the students and not as a result of their negligence and grading system. As a regional examinations body, they need to understand this behavior is unacceptable and they need to correct the mistakes quickly and at no additional cost to the innocent parents whose only mistake was to have confidence in CXC this year and allow their child to take their exams. Rastax, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
I'm trying to get to a thing. One of these business places, but I cannot get through.
What business place
is that, it man? Possible is put it over the air?
Put what over the air, ma'am?
The name of the place.
Ma'am, what it is you're trying to help us to do for you, please, if you can tell me, I will try to help.
Digicel.
Mm-hmm. You're trying to reach Digicel and?
I cannot get through.
Okay.
So you have any number that I can reach them or let be my number, they will contact me?
Ma'am, we don't have numbers here for the various outlets, unfortunately. And if I put your number on the air, I doubt that they will call you. Which number are you calling and what are you trying to reach them for?
4677000 and 5303444 and 5375529.
And what's happening to those numbers?
They tell me pressing certain digits and still without success, I cannot get through.
Okay, ma'am. So here's the problem. In several cases, these call numbers are automated call numbers, and the instructions they give you would assign you to a particular department, a particular person, or what type of assistance you need. So you usually call that number, and then they would say, press this and press that. And if you want billing, press this. If you want assistance, press that. Wait on an operator, press so on. So it depends on who you're trying to reach, whether the call is completed the way you're calling, and there's several things that could go wrong, which is why I made the comment to you that just putting your number on air would not get the type of response and assistance you need. I would suggest if you're having difficulty following the instructions or if it's not connecting, if you can ask someone who's close to you to walk you through it, it will be a lot better than us trying to do it on the radio in public for you. It will be difficult for us to do that, okay?
Okay, thanks.
All right, thanks as well. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Son.
Yes, sir.
Morning, how are you, sir?
Hey, I'm all right, sir, and you?
Pretty well. I'm going to ask you to walk with me into the members' lounge because the things I'm going to discuss with you really and truly are, I want to learn, and I want to find out exactly if I'm wrong so I can be corrected. That's all right with you?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. First, I think the matter with the appointment of the ambassador or the diplomat, whoever the person may be,
mm-hmm.
I think this is a case for the Minister of Foreign Affairs to make the request to the Prime Minister, and then the Prime Minister made the request to the Governor General. Because what I've been hearing coming out of the discussion between yourself and the gentleman is the absence of the person who is responsible for the foreign ministries. So I think that the Minister of Foreign Affairs will play a major role in any appointment for any diplomat or any ambassador, any consul general across the world. The other thing is that the point, I want to accept the fact that I may be defeated, but I am defeated by name, and I'm challenging a situation. Because if I don't challenge the situation, I would not feel happy that my choice. I'm saying that to say this, Mr. Johnson, that under the democracy, that the process was not done in a true democracy or a democratic way. The fact of the matter is that the lady will win regardless. But the fact of the matter is that her nomination did not come from the rank and file of the constituency branch members. It came from the executive council, from what I've read in the paper. I believe in the position of the democracy. And I believe that if there were two people contesting the election, that the members of the branch should have had the right to place a vote for or against, and that person becomes accepted as the choice for the candidate. So I challenge the way it was done. I read where the other person gave away. That's all right, but I still think that in fairness to the rank and file members and in fairness to keeping the branch knit together, that everybody would know exactly what went on, that it should have been a case where the members rank and file, not just the executive, had to have a decision in the process of the nomination.
But who says that they did not, sir?
If you read today's paper,
mm-hmm.
back page, statement by the Prime Minister,
mm-hmm.
will relate to what I'm coming from. I don't want to go over it now, but I know okay. that I know I could expect you to read that.
Of course.
That page of today's paper.
I read it, sir.
Right. I did not signify that the executive, it signified that the executive, it did not signify that the rank and file of the branch.
But who gives the executive the power to operate under the parliamentary system that you know because you were a member of parliament?
All right, Mr. Johnson, there is a blockade in the nomination of a candidate. A candidate being nominated and selected by the branch does not mean that that candidate is accepted. That candidate now has to go before a candidate select committee,
mm-hmm.
which will endorse or reject. So the position is that regardless of what would have happened there, that this candidate would have still have to go before the candidates, which is the same NEC members. What I am questioning is that in the area of democracy, in the area of seeing fair play, in the area of people believing within themselves that what was said is practice, and that is that you're given an opportunity for the vote to be cast because you set up what you can consider a satellite base to cause that. And the satellite base happened to be the executive and the rank and file of the branch. And that satellite base works towards what will become the position as far as the candidate is concerned. Regardless of what the candidate will be rectified by the NEC Select Committee. So all I'm saying is that if you are preaching democracy, if you are talking about the right way for someone not to be disappointed, or that you're trying to hold your branch together in terms of support, then the democracy approach to it is the correct way. And that's all I'm challenging. That's all I'm challenging, that yes, it's a very good choice, but the choice overlooked the rank and file of the party. Now, let me move on further. Now, in terms of the young lady being accepted as the candidate, she has not, nomination day has not upon her yet. So there's no way that the matter between the Governor General and herself is a challenge, because she's only been named as the candidate. She has not been, as far as the writ is concerned, the writ has not been filed for the constituency where the person or person on that writ will be accepted as the candidate to contest the election. So she has room in terms of notifying the Governor General and working within the rank and file. Now, the other point there is that there is going to be a need for a deputy speaker. It's because Mr. Clark held the position of deputy speaker and Ms. Brown held the position of chairman of committees. So Ms. Moore, chances are that Ms. Moore will fit into position very, very early, which will be accommodated, as either deputy speaker or chairman of committees, making way down the road for probably a ministry. Now, these things are actually the parliamentary aspect of it. But then the other aspect of it is that from the Barbados Workers Union end, obviously there have to be certain things that Ms. Moore would put in place as far as the Barbados Workers Union is concerned, being the General Secretary and being named as a candidate. Obviously, you and I would know that this island is a two-sided island, if you're with me, against me. You would know that within the Barbados Labour Party and within the Democratic Labour Party, there are people who support the other side. I'm sure that within the Barbados Workers Union, there are people who support the other side and probably feel uncomfortable with having her as the position she holds. So I think it's an interesting position. But somewhere along the line, it is questionable. Now, I'm coming on.
Why do you say questionable, sir?
Mr. Johnson, I'm going to ask a question for you, right? Because mm-hmm. I am not the only person that's going to ask that question.
What question?
You rank and file. Can you serve two masters?
Sir, you know, sir, I have to tell you, right? I must be the biggest dunce on planet Earth. Sir,
I'm listening.
Dr. Chedi Jagan and his wife, president of Guyana at one point, his wife too, were leaders of the union. Basdeo Pandey, prime minister of Trinidad and Tobago, was the leader of his union. Eric Gehry, Grenada, premier, leader of his union. Ebenezer T. Joshua, St. Vincent, premier, leader of his union. And I could go up the line to Bradshaw, Bird, Manley, Bustamante, through the entire Caribbean. And bring it home to Barbados, because I asked the previous caller. 28 years ago, when the hotel workers, represented by the Barbados Workers Union, went on strike in the middle of the hotel peak season, Christmas and All Year's, the Deputy General Secretary of the Barbados Workers Union, the Honorable Evelyn Graves, representative for St. Lucie, was the Minister of Tourism. And the Barbados Workers Union took the decision to strike, even though the Deputy General Secretary was the Minister of Tourism and would be embarrassed by the move. Now, what was his... Sir, hold on a second. You keep telling me about serving two masters. And I made the comment to the previous caller, and I'll make the comment to you as well. The person will have to determine which master they want to serve. And the workers will make the adjustment one way or the other, or the persons that they represent in Parliament, which is St. George North, will make their decision one way or the other. We keep forgetting that in this equation, there is something called the people. And if the people choose to make whatever decision they want to make, we could talk about two masters, we could talk about two heads, we could talk about sellout as loud as we care to. The people will make the decision.
Who made the decision, Mr. Johnson? This discussion is going to be very, 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 very reasonable to both of us.
Yeah.
Who makes the decision in case the lady is elected for the constituency?
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about people.
Yes, the people of St. George will make that decision.
Okay, but in case there is a situation of decisive situation,
mm-hmm.
the people make the decision, and who is in there to get that decision coming back to them? Not the same person.
No.
So who's
going to vote? No. No. So let me ask you this, right? If the leader, the general secretary of the Barbados Workers Union, takes a position to her union executive, her union general body, who are upset about an issue, right? And they decide to make a decision that she does not agree with. Who carries the sway?
As a matter of fact, that's why I'm talking about democracy. Around the table, a decision comes from a group of people who have decided one way and you go with it. Even mm-hmm. if you vote around the table against them, mm-hmm. the majority that comes up from that table is the decision.
And what does the leader do at that time?
The leader at least portrays the same position. The leader has to accept what...
Correct. I am their leader, so I have to follow them. Right. You're right where I want you to be. So tell me then, at that point, what will anybody in that position have to do?
This is a duly elected member of parliament for a constituency now.
Correct.
Along with being the representative of an organization that holds a major point in Barbados in terms of workers organized, being organized. If there is a situation, as you spoke about, in relation to the hotel worker strike, and as it is, there's unlikely to be a hotel worker strike in any time.
But here's the point. You know, sir, again, I would say I must be the biggest idiot on two legs because people keep missing what I say. I reached for the hotel workers on purpose because right now, the people in Barbados who need the most representation are the hotel workers. Because
there are not many doors in terms of being organized because of COVID.
Sir, you're really missing my point big time.
That is precisely
my point. The hotel workers are home. Their period at home is running out. There are renegotiations to try to figure out how much you could extend it or get them back to work. A hotel on the west coast has just closed down and will put everybody on the breadline, made everybody redundant. These are the people who need representation now more than any other. We ain't talking about the new ones to come yet with the new hotels. We have people at Sandals crying out about lack of representation and Jamaicans taking the job and all sorts of comments coming out of that, right? I picked on hotel workers on purpose.
I know that. That's why I'm telling you, let's go into members' lounge.
Okay. You want to have a sidebar? Okay.
A sidebar, right.
Okay.
What I am seeing here, right,
mm-hmm.
that the benefit of the Barbados Workers Union mm-hmm. associated with the government in terms of the Minister of Labour.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the challenge, if there will be a challenge, would not be the real challenge as it would have been before, because you are within the same walls, in the same hall, at the same room that I'm in, and we can negotiate to the point of making the
situation look good. Listen, so let me say to you, right? I heard a comment you made just now, and that was the comment I thought all along. I was going to ask it this morning to be provocative, but I knew the conversation was going to be political anyhow, so I didn't bother to. I just let the politics roll, and as the people come up with the thing, I try to inject it into the conversation. I want to ask you this question. What ministry would you give the good lady if and when she steps into Parliament?
The Minister of Labour.
Right, so therefore Colin will go, right?
Huh?
Colin will have to go?
You can find another ministry for Colin.
Hmm.
What is the
current Minister of Labour's bona fides? What is he an expert in?
He has spent a lot of time doing work within the hotel industry.
Human resources.
He's been exposed mm-hmm. to that. So he's well-groomed.
So he's well qualified to be the Minister of Labour.
Right.
So you remove him and put him in where?
I'll put him.
Deputy Speaker?
No. his ministerial position.
So you see, and this is what is fascinating about this for me, right? Because, like you, that's not the candidate that I thought would have. I heard all the talk, and to me, it didn't make political sense. Because if you're talking about heavy lifting, and I keep saying whenever the Prime Minister says heavy lifting, I think she means a ministerial appointment. That's the only time she's used those terms. Prime Minister is under fire for having a too large cabinet and has just did a reshuffle to sort of reduce the numbers, to try to appease the public and make the numbers look a little smaller. So I saw no need to expand the backbench. The Prime Minister does not need a backbench because a backbench can revolt. And I don't think, 27 people, you don't need an extra backbencher. So therefore the move would have to be to bring a ministerial appointment. You have two ministers in the Senate. So to me, to take somebody who's not a minister and move them into the upper house, into the lower house, you have to be thinking of giving them a ministerial appointment, which means another reshuffle or moving somebody else to the back bench. But I heard your deputy speaker and other ways to move around it. So I will wait and see what happens.
Let's step this straight on.
Since we're behind the chair talking, go ahead.
There are two situations here, Mr. Johnson, that you've just created a challenge. She's on the payment as an employee of the Barbados Workers Union. She draws a salary from the Barbados Workers Union.
Correct.
As a minister now, mm-hmm. what will be the position in terms of her salary as a minister of government? Will she be able to hold the position as the salary coming out of the Barbados Workers Union and hold the salary provided for as a minister? That is another question you would have to ask. But I think what is happening is that we are seeing interesting moments in politics at this particular moment. One of the things I'm going to suggest to you now that I am going to hold against the government is that you told me 2 years ago that the present opposition or members of the present opposition did not fulfill their role as far as governing this country is concerned. You told me of several things that are likely to happen if you get the government. I personally believe, and I think other people would say the same thing or disagree, that now is the time to hold those persons up to ridicule because you haven't done what you said you was going to do. We haven't proven that this happened, the next thing happened. But you all across Barbados, you said this, you said that. These gentlemen can come and deny exactly what you are saying because you have not proven any point on them. So I think that one of the things that we have got to declare fully is that as far as your opponents are concerned, your opponents really not started. Your opponents cannot start. Hello, are you there with me?
I am, sir. Right, following you step by step.
Yeah, your opponents cannot start because your opponents have left what you can consider a whole series of things that they should be questioned on. You can't question them on the platforms out there again. You had an opportunity to bring files, raise files, show discrepancies, and be able to say, well, look, this person has failed the public of Barbados in terms of lying to Parliament or doing things to certain statutory boards that they have held. So I personally believe, and this is only my feeling, right, that somewhere along the line, this government has now got to go back to extend what I would consider to be points of interest in terms of these people who want to come forward as candidates. Yes, they have a right to, but they have not been fully exposed as to why they should not. So they have a right to. And thanks for Gina Cole. Well,
I want to say this to you, though, right? I smiled when you said, give the good lady the Ministry of Labour. So the Minister of Labour will respond to a matter raised by the General Secretary of the Barbados Workers' Union, who happens to be the same person. It's the Prime Minister talking to herself about when to call the by-election. Okay, I understand how politics work now. thanks for the enlightenment as a former member of Parliament. A WhatsApp message says, the caller is correct, the previous caller, the lady caller with the problem. I've been unable to get through to Digicel for months. When prompted to key in my cell phone number, it is saying my number is not valid. That happens when I use both forms of the number, that is, with or without the area code. If my number is not valid, why am I still paying a bill and getting service? If your station can please reach out to Digicel on air so that they'll be aware there's a problem with their call system. I thank you for your attention. Now, I made a personal response to the person who did not agree with me, but I promised I would read the statement and I will wait to see what happens. I welcome being wrong. And this is one occasion that I would really welcome being wrong.